Hello and welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins. I met this week with a young Irish pilgrim who had just returned from the Camino, and she still had the Camino glow. We talked for 90 minutes, never met each other before. We could have talked until the sun went down, because we're pilgrims. And this is a podcast about the Camino de Santiago, a series of pilgrimages across Europe. Most pilgrims arrive at the Spanish city of Santiago de Compostela. Indeed, this week, the 300,000th Compostela, or certificate, was issued. All those people walking, hoping they find some light at the end of the tunnel, some morsel of insight into why we're here, what it all means. Then again, maybe it's just the greatest indulgence of all to be able to switch off from life, from mobile phones, from emails, from the internet, from groceries, from responsibilities. I wonder, should we just wander? There's an old saying, one day your life will flash before your eyes. Make sure it's worth watching. My guest this week is Gabriella Ferenzi. We're kind of kindred spirits. We were both authors in the first edition of the book, My Camino Walk. You can buy it online. It only costs a couple of dollars. I'm not talking to Gabriella today to sell books. I want to talk about a journey, her Camino journey. Welcome, pilgrim.
Hello, good morning, and good evening, good afternoon.
time zone. Everywhere's a crazy time zone when you live in Australia. That's what it's all about.
Right.
You say you and your partner left busy London for the wilds of Spain, and you weren't sure what to expect. What did you find?
Well, it was a very, very interesting and very personal experience, I guess, that was really transformative in many, many ways. What did I find? It's really difficult to sum up in like one sentence. We all went for, for different reasons. We weren't quite sure why. We just wanted to get away from it all. And for me, one of my key takeaways, I guess, was learning to be a bit more spontaneous and just dealing with, you know, with not knowing what the next day will hold and where we are going to end up sleeping. It was all very, very spontaneous, and I just learned to let go.
Yeah, do you remember how you first learned about the Camino?
To be honest, I don't know. I think perhaps I heard about it from one of our... Well, actually, the very first time I heard about it was visiting friends in Spain. And we had some time with them. We spent some time with them in Logroño. And I understand that Logroño is on the way. And I remember this friend, Elena, talking to us about the Camino, but I wasn't particularly aware of it. I didn't pay too much attention to it. And then later on, a few years afterwards, I heard about it probably from a coach of us. And that's when I started to really look into it. What is this about? And I was like, gosh, this is exactly what we need, just to get away from it all and not just, you know, a simple holiday, but something that is challenging for us at the same time, because we really like some alternative, quirky ways to get away from it all.
Yeah, that's
in a nutshell.
Yeah. You say in your piece in the book, the 16 days was the longest break you'd ever taken from your business. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and I'm interested in what you do, because you're talking on the line from London, but clearly you're not British.
Yes, that's right. I'm actually, I was born in Hungary in a family with a German heritage. So I speak German and Hungarian. And then we moved over here to London about 10, 11 years ago now. And I've been teaching German and Hungarian. So that's my profession. That's my calling, actually. And, And I've been, I set up a business. It's called Prolingua Global, and it's a language training, language coaching company. And we work with executives in finance predominantly. So that's who I am. That's what I do. It's all about languages, cultures colliding. A really interesting experience here in London.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to that later because, in a sense, you are trying to make the world a smaller place. And that's very much what pilgrims try to do. And on the Camino, you meet lots of different people. And a pilgrimage is sharing and learning and caring and listening and trying to make the world a smaller place. But before we get to that, it was the longest, the 16 days on the Camino was the longest time you had spent away from the business. How did it feel leaving all that responsibility behind?
Well, for me, it was much easier than for my husband. So I also happen to be involved in my husband's business. It's a hair and beauty salon with 10 to 12 people working in it here in London. It's a nice little local salon. And that was trickier to leave behind, as opposed to me teaching my clients. Because at that time, it was only me working as a teacher, as a freelancer. So my clients were very understanding and they were very supportive and they had no issues at all having a break from German and Hungarian for a week or two. But it's about the other business where you know you do require some management skills that will have to be, you know, just left, and you have to kind of let go and allow your team, allow your people to look after the business. But actually, it turned out to be a pretty good experience for both me and my husband, who could really switch off a little bit and know that the business was in safe hands. Indeed, 16 days, it was quite long, so it was challenging in that aspect as well to let go. But I guess we accomplished it.
Yeah, but that's a very important point, and we'll get to that. Because you initially said at the very start of the interview, I learned to let go. Yes. And I think that it doesn't matter whether you're a business, whether you own a hair and beauty salon or you run a business, a linguistics business, the Camino provides an opportunity to let go. Yes. So now I want to talk about preparation. Tell my listeners about preparing for the Camino. This is very important because you're a very organized person. I mean, and you were stepping right outside your comfort zone. Indeed, your husband, as you said, leaving his business. Had you done any physical training?
Zero, Dan. It was zero.
No.
Zero. And it was really, really challenging in that aspect as well. So we were quite, well, one could say that we were rather reckless. I guess it's right. But somehow it's just, you know, we didn't have time to go shopping. And we literally bought our hiking boots, even the backpack, the day before we left. So it was absolutely crazy, but somehow we managed to pick the right backpack, the perfect shoes. So we had just one tiny little blister. Well, it wasn't me, it was my husband, but just one tiny little blister. So somehow we managed to pick the right sort of equipment, but not preparing for the journey was part of this, you know, learning to let go and learning to be spontaneous. I love planning. You know, I'm half German, half Hungarian. We love to be organized. We love the rules. We love to plan ahead. And I didn't do anything this time. And it was part of the whole process of me challenging myself to let go again.
So it's, if you are, as you said, half Hungarian, half German, you are a planner, you are an organized person. Were you freaking out in the days before? I mean, you just told us that you bought your hiking gear the day before. Were you just like freaking out because you weren't sure, I'm I'm certain at that stage that you were going to have this kind of realization on the Camino, oh, I can let go, everything's okay. Were you?
I think I wasn't freaking out, but I think what helped me is this blissfully unaware of what's awaiting on the journey.
Yeah.
I had like no idea. I didn't read much about it. You know, I read about the spiritual aspect of it. I read Paulo Coelho's book, but I tried to go there really unbiased and see just very, you know, in a very natural way where this would take us. And probably that helped me not to freak out, because if I had known what was awaiting there for us, then probably I would have freaked out, yes.
I think it's interesting, you know, Gabriella, I've spoken to almost 95 people for these podcasts over the last 2 years, and some people say that the Camino called them. And I've got a sense maybe that it was calling you. And that's why you weren't so freaked out. Maybe you had a sense that something was waiting for you.
Yeah, I'm quite sure that's the right way to interpret the whole story, I guess. Yes, I never really thought about it that way, but there is something about it certainly, Dan. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I have here some quotes from the book. And again, we're not talking about selling books, but I just, when I read your chapter of, I just loved it. And I thought, you know, the way you wrote it was so, so lovely, because you kind of didn't take yourself too seriously. You were saying, you know, a couple of days in, what on earth have we got ourselves in for? You're saying, third day on the way, you've walked about 50 kilometers and the pain was excruciating. What on earth did you expect if you were going to be walking 20, 25, 30 kilometers a day?
I seriously have no idea. Seriously have no idea. And I'm not sure how we did it. To be honest, when we embarked on the journey, we weren't even sure if we would reach Santiago at all. We were like, you know, let's start walking and then let's see how long. We had no idea about our physical capabilities, you know, how long, like what sort of sections we would be able to walk in one day. Absolutely no idea. So we just had to really learn along the way what we are capable of, what our bodies can do, how far we can stretch ourselves, both physically and mentally. So yeah, it was crazy.
You know, you said both my husband and I are very protective of each other, our families, our belongings, our values, our everything. We never really knew where we'd end up, how far we could go. It seemed impossible to tell in the morning where we'd spend the night, and even if we wouldn't let go of our shit, would we? So let me ask you a kind of general question, if you like, but we'll get a bit deeper later. How has it changed your life, that letting go?
Yeah, that letting go is, we were talking about it with my husband just this morning as I was, you know, preparing mentally for this interview with you. So that particular section that you just quoted was about, there is this cheap transportation service where there is a car who would come and collect your backpack from the albergue, and then you would tell them where to bring it, and then they would just leave it for you there, and you can just walk, you know, without the heavy burden on your shoulders. But then, you know, we figured that everything we've got in the backpack, that's all we are at the moment. We can't let go of that those are our basic belongings. And so we decided to just carry it all the way. You know, it was quite heavy, but it was part of us and we just couldn't let go of that. But there are, and I'm not judging anyone who would take advantage of this transportation service, because there is a point where we need to learn to let go of that. And for us, we let go of, you know, of everything our busy life was about for 16 days to just really clear our minds. But we didn't let go of our basic belongings. And that's just the way we approach this whole story. It was day three, indeed excruciating pain. And that's when we learned first about this transportation service. And we were like, oh, maybe we should take advantage of that. Because we realized that all we were really looking at was the ground, because our necks and our head was kind of naturally going down because of the burden on the shoulders. And we couldn't really admire the view. We couldn't really admire what's happening around us. But eventually, we learned to be able to see what's around despite the burden and with the burden. And there is a point, I guess, in life when we need to know when we need to let go even of that, you know, basic stuff. We managed to pull it through.
Yeah, and the Camino, as we've said many times, and I know you would have thought it many times, is a metaphor for life. Some days are easier than others, and some days you feel like, I can't go on here carrying this burden, but when you kind of do, you feel a fitness, don't you, a certain spiritual fitness for the journey ahead, and that's a great it's a great feeling, isn't it?
Exactly, it is. And another interesting realization was about us as a couple, and that's a very personal experience that, you know, we walked it together, and we never really separated for one day or for hours. So we walked it all the way from start to finish together. And then what we realized is that, you know, there were certain days when one of us was moving a bit faster, was more dynamic, and so the other one either had to slow down or had to, again, you know, speed up a little bit. And then, you know, again, on other days, it was vice versa. So it's just, as a couple, there are times when we need to speed up or slow down in order to keep the pace and help each other. And that was another very interesting realization. And, yeah.
That's another wonderful metaphor for life, Gabriella. What you just said then, as a couple, sometimes you need to speed up, yeah, or slow down. Sometimes you need to even slow down to let the other catch up. And that's very much a part of a marriage, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's a beautiful experience.
Yeah, and a beautiful metaphor. In the book, you say, on one hand, we got used to it and learned to cope. On the other hand, we accepted it as being an inseparable part of our journey and started to really enjoy and appreciate the way. You say, to me, this has two symbolic meanings. Life throws us at so many difficulties, and there are two possible ways to react. You can either learn to cope and accept them, learn from them and get on with life, or you can find the point when you say, that's it, enough, and find a solution to overcome those difficulties by eliminating certain things from your life you can cope without. Both points are equally valid, and the way you take it is entirely down to you. No one can or should judge you. So I highlighted that passage in the book and put a yellow sticky beside it because I wanted to ask you, are you still living that today? You've been back now a little while from the Camino. Do you still, in your day-to-day life, think, oh, I know what I learned on the Camino and I'm going to apply it today?
Yeah, most certainly. I keep catching myself, you know, thinking about, oh, hang on, actually, this is a point where I need to just leave it as it is and not overstress it. There are certain points, both in business and in personal life, I guess, when I get a little irritated, And yeah, like this, this carrying the burden and having that backpack on you, or whether you should have it or not, get it transported. So that was for me the key realization that sometimes, you know, I have to cope with the difficulty. It's not about escaping from it. I just have to tackle it head on. Is that a way to say it in English?
Yes, yes, it is. Yes, 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 yes. You have to tackle it head on. That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then other times there are points when I just need to learn to walk away from it. It's not my problem. I won't be able to solve it. So yeah, I keep catching myself getting into these sorts of decisions that, that we learned on the Camino or that we faced in the Camino as well.
Let me ask you a couple of questions, Gabriella. And I ask most of my guests, are you a spiritual person?
Spiritual, I would say, yes, I am, most certainly.
Would you then say you were surprised by the transformation that occurred on the Camino?
Was I surprised? I guess I still was. Yes.
Then let me ask you a separate question straight away before you think about it too much. Were you surprised to find that you needed transformation, or that there was transformation on offer?
I guess, yeah, it's a really tricky question because there were certain expectations, but I was trying to get away from those expectations. And that's exactly why I went there, or why we went there, relatively unbiased. So I'm not sure what to say, to be honest. The transformation was, I think it was much, much deeper than I expected. Much deeper.
Do you remember when on the Camino, or where you were, that you had this light bulb moment? Something is happening here.
Oh, to be honest, from the get-go, we had so many interesting experiences and encounters that we were just constantly thinking, and we were kept on our toes. There were really interesting encounters with situations where we were not sure, shall we do this or shall we not do this? Is this cheating or is this not cheating? Like constantly we were exposed to cheating in terms of, you know, for example, the backpack, or on one occasion, it was really, late, because we started the each day a bit later than the usual pilgrim. So we would like start the journey around 10 or 11 a.m. as opposed to early mornings. And that would mean that, you know, we would get to the destination around 6 or 7 p.m. as opposed to 2 to 3, which again is the usual pilgrim's routine. So on one occasion, we were faced with sunsets coming up, and we knew that we had still some substantial amount of walk to do that day. And then a guy came along, and it was in the middle of nowhere, and he wanted to give us a lift to Astorga by car. And we were like, shall we do this or shall we not do this? So constantly these challenges, or moral challenges, like, is this cheating now? Are we supposed to walk all the way? Or, you know, we were faced with these burdens from the very beginning. And so back to your question, spiritual and transformational, yes, constantly, like every day there were these moral dilemmas that we had to deal with.
yeah, and I'm going to get to that story. We're going to go back to that story because that's a really good story. But about Pablo, right?
Yes, that's him.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to tell that story in a minute, or you're going to tell it. But you say in the book there's a point when you need to let go, where you simply need to change, lessen the burden in order to be able to focus on other important things. Let me ask you something, and it might be a difficult question to ask. You might find it easy to answer. If someone is listening now, how can they do that? How can they lessen the burden in order to be able to focus on other important things?
Wow, I love the question. Great question. How can we? Yes, I guess it's constant decisions, decisions, decisions. And I would say that the more decisions we make, the easier it is to see where that point is when we just let go or when we tackle it head on. And another part of me was, I wasn't a very intuitive person. I was very rational. And I'm still learning to listen to my intuition. It's a process for me. But I think it's with the help of your intuitive self and this constant decision making that will help you to see what it is that you need to let go and what are the problems that you need to face and you can't escape. So I can't give a very practical answer, but that's how I feel about this at the moment.
That's one of the best answers in 93 episodes of My Camino, the podcast. That is absolutely outstanding. What a great answer. You know, you talked about Pablo. My next question is, and I wanted you to explain to us, did you get lost?
Yes, we did.
Tell us the story.
Yes, we did, and quite early on. I think it was between, so I'm trying to recall now the locations, but it was somewhere between León and Astorga, basically. There is a place called Hospital do Brigo or something like
yeah,
that.
That's it, yeah, yeah.
And after that, there are two potential ways to take. One is a more scenic way that is, it's a bit longer, but it's scenic and it's beautiful. And then there is the shorter way. It's on the road. It's like following the road. And we were like, so what shall we do? It's quite late. We know that, but fingers crossed we will find accommodation at the next little village. So let's just take the scenic route. And to be honest, we did get lost. Like the signs were not very clear at that particular point of the journey. So we were wondering, yes, whether we were on the right path. And unfortunately, the plan didn't work. So the next little village, they had no more accommodation left. Again, it was quite late. And so we decided to just continue walking. We couldn't do anything else, really. And again, the signposts were not very clear. And we were in the middle of, it wasn't forests. It was like plain lands and it was hills and not mountains, but hills. And when we were a bit wondering, really, what time will we be able to reach Astorga? And we could see that the sun was coming down. So we were extremely, extremely tired and pain in every single part of our bodies. But we were just continuing, and we were starting to really speed up despite the pain. And then at some point we just hear this car approaching, like it's in the hills. It wasn't a road as such, but there was a car coming, across us. And we were like, gosh, who is this guy? Who is this crazy weirdo at this time of day by car here? So the guy stopped And then he was asking where we were heading. And we said, well, we know we are crazy, kind of, but we are going to Astorga. And he was like, Astorga, that's still, I don't know what he said, but it was still at least like 7 or 8 kilometers away. It was,
oh, no.
It was really crazy. And we were like, yes, we know. We couldn't find any accommodation. And it was all in broken Spanish. The guy didn't speak a word in English, but he said he understood yes and no. But it was really like broken Spanish. But anyway, he said, guys, jump into this car. I need to take you to Astorga because it's getting really late. And we were like, okay, so that seems to be a sign that we really need someone's help now. But then about 2 kilometers in, because we had this Fitbit watch, you know, that would monitor how many kilometers you have done the day. And so the Fitbit said we did about 2 kilometers with Pablo. And then he stopped in the middle of the hills and he said, this is my casa. And then we were like, seriously, it was in the middle of the of nowhere, a tent. And he wanted to show around his place. Like, well, that's very kind of you. That's very hospitable. But we are not sure, really, if we want to, you know, we were getting a bit worried, of course. Like, who is this guy? And, yeah, so he offered some interesting substances for us to smoke with him, to join him. And we were like, goodness me, we really should go. So... Again, dilemma. What shall we do? We decided to, you know, at that point, there were 5 to 6 kilometers left until we would reach Astorga. And then we said to Pablo, listen, thank you very much, but we will need to skip. We will need to do the rest of the journey on our foot, whatever it takes, because it's just too much of a risk for us to continue with you. And, you know... So eventually, we reached Astorga. It was 9 p.m. in the evening, like completely dark, of course, by the time we reached the hotel. So yeah, we stayed at a hotel at that point because we were lucky to find a hotel room, but we felt it was a well-deserved treat for us to treat our sore bodies and feet to a nice hotel. And yeah, that was another really interesting experience.
Pablo on the way to Astorga. I love it. And he says he wants to show you around his castle. It's a tent.
It was three tents like attached to each other. And
no.
he was a very happy chat and a very funny and really kind guy. But
no.
Who knows?
No, you're not staying in the wilds of Spain with Pablo, who's smoking spliffs and encouraging you to smoke them with him. You know,
yes.
You talk in your piece in the book about Paulo Coelho's pilgrimage, where he said, when you travel, you experience in a very practical way a kind of rebirth. What's it like for a half German, half Hungarian girl who lives now in Great Britain to go through a rebirth in Spain?
Well, yes. Very, very, how can I say? So it was again... In many ways, it was cultures colliding on the Camino.
Yeah, right.
All sorts of people from all walks of life. So in many ways, it wasn't particularly different to living in London, you know, one of the biggest multiculturalities in the world. So in that sense, it was, you know, it was a usual experience. For me, rebirth was more about... Well, perhaps another lesson that I learned is that, well, I try to be very, you know, very, well, not controlling. Well, there is a control freak in me, as I'm sure in many of us there is, but there are certain points when I just need to rely on the help of others and I need to ask for help. And so this Pablo was a great example. We needed his help for those 2 kilometers, but they were life-saving. And on other occasions as well, many times we were reliant on other people's help, on other people's willingness to help us. And that's another thing that I learned. It was part of a rebirth or not rebirth, I'm not sure. But certainly it was a wake-up call for me to learn that I just can't do it all by myself. I really need the help of others at times. And it's nice to help others at the same time. And that was another interesting lesson that I learned, I guess.
What would you say to somebody listening who is thinking of walking the Camino?
Well, the question is why they are thinking of walking the Camino. I guess, we didn't have a clear answer to that, but there is certainly, so if someone is thinking about it, perhaps the Camino is calling, as you said. So why do we encounter this interesting way, even without embarking it? Why is it that we start thinking about it a bit more consciously or more seriously? So, I would certainly, just recommend it. So if anyone is toying with the idea, I think there is a reason why you toy with the idea. And if you start toying with the idea, you should just simply go for it and see it for yourself and experience what it gives you.
How do you explain it to family and friends?
That was interesting. So our families, they are not particularly spiritual in any sense of the way. They are not religious, and they are not spiritual either. I guess it was a really surprising move from us to do this. In their eyes, they were really surprised, and they couldn't really get why we would do such a thing. But then after, they were following our journey, we were sending them pictures along the way, and they become very supportive. And there were points where we thought, gosh, we may not be able to reach Santiago at all because we were getting really tired. And then they were, sending supportive messages to say, just go on, guys. Now you reach this point. I'm sure you would be able to reach Santiago. Just go for it. So it's interesting how they got involved in it and they really enjoyed it somehow with us. We were not in constant touch with them, but every other day or every 3 days we were trying to send them just messages, hey, we are now in this particular town or city. They were following us on Google Maps, so they became supportive and they really enjoyed it with us somehow.
And that's a wonderful thing to share with people back home, I think, too. Social media is fantastic for that because the pilgrim community is so strong worldwide. We can follow many people's Caminos and you can watch them and say, oh, I stayed there. I walked there. I know exactly where they are. I know what's a great place to be. It's a really nice way to stay connected. But I'm going to ask you just a couple more questions. You're a linguist. You're a language expert, and you say learning a new language promotes understanding between people and businesses and countries and cultures. It bridges gaps and enables to build meaningful connections. Should pilgrims learn Spanish before they go?
Great question. So what we experienced is that it certainly helps. It certainly helps if you learn Spanish.
Yeah.
At times, even I, as a linguist, even I was really challenged you know, that and annoyed at times, because I would expect, you know, the Camino is like is a point where people from all around the world would meet, would need accommodation, would need food to be served, and I was constantly surprised how little the locals spoke English or German or, you know, any other languages. In fact, it was mainly Spanish. And there were times, especially when we were really tired, but it just was so annoying. Like, how come that these guys meet people from everywhere and yet they don't speak a word in another language other than Spanish? And, but I guess it's part of the experience, and that's something that makes it very authentic, despite the Camino being very industrialized now. I think that's one of the points where you can really see real Spanish, Galician, you know, people being their authentic selves and just providing accommodations the way they do, serving the food they prefer it to be served, as opposed to how we pilgrims would expect it. So again, it was challenging, but it was challenging me in a good way. And so should you learn Spanish, I think if you really want to experience the Camino in a more authentic way, then perhaps you should. It's enough to learn just a few vital basics, like, is there a room or is there a bed for one person or two people? And clearly ordering food. I guess you learn it along the way anyway, but I found that it does help, that it does help to make the right connection, and also by speaking of the locals, it sends out the right message, doesn't it? Like that, you know, they are important to you. You want to understand them. You want to understand their culture, their language. I think it's just, yeah, like to see what the culture is all about, there is an element to it where language comes into play, and you really kind of understand what it's all about if you speak just some vital basics. You don't need to be fluent. I'm not fluent myself, but I didn't really learn Spanish. It's just as a linguist, for me it's easier to pick up, and I've got some very good friends in Spain who I managed to learn a lot from. But I guess it helps. What's your take on this, Dan?
Well, that's interesting you should ask me, Gabriella, because I think that it shows that you are trying. And as a pilgrim, I think you are a carer and a sharer, and you should be somebody who is grateful for the opportunity to be experiencing the Spanish culture, the French culture. I walked for a week in France as well. And I was walking to a small town in 2016, and I decided I would learn how to ask, do you have a bed for the night, please? So it was, uno karma para patha el noche por favor. So I went to the albergue in San Martin del Camino, and I said, I walked in, feeling very proud of myself, una karma parapatha el noche por favor. And the woman went, ha ha, that's the worst Spanish I've ever heard. But she said, thank you for trying. And thank you for taking the time to learn it so that you could communicate with me. She gave me a big hug and we laughed and laughed and laughed. Well, she wouldn't let me then. For the rest of, that was like lunchtime, right? She wouldn't let me order dinner or order a beer or sit outside. I had to speak Spanish the whole time. So she would say to me, no, Dan, stop. Google it on your phone and speak in Spanish. There's all these Spanish people. They thought it was the funniest thing ever. Dan, read some more Spanish on your phone. But at least I was trying.
Yeah. they really appreciate
it. Yeah, that's it.
Nelson Mandela has this saying that if you talk to a man in a language he understands, you talk to his head. But if you talk to him in his own language, you talk to his heart. And that's actually what we are doing. You know, we are extending a hand. We show appreciation and we show, you know, that we are grateful for them allowing us to be, to stay there, to be with them and to be involved. And I think it's a wonderful experience, yes.
Let me ask you a question way out of left field. You're a pilgrim now. If you could whisper something into the ear of 21-year-old Gabriella, what would you say?
Oh, wow. What would I say? I would probably just say that appreciate the little things and keep your eyes wide open. Be open-minded. I guess that's my key. Be open-minded.
What about if you could whisper something to a 75-year-old Gabriella?
What would I say to my old self? I would just say that I hope you've had a great time until now and just keep going.
You know, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, Gabriella. It's been a great pleasure, and I hope you find what you're looking for somewhere along the way. I suspect the Hungarian German living in Great Britain who has forged for herself a great future, whether it's a little bit of pilgrim in there as well, I have a sneaking suspicion that you're going to do very, very, very well. Thank you so much for your time. It's in the morning in London. You've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. It was a really great experience. And I can't wait to listen back to it and keep thinking about all these wonderful questions you made. You made me think.
Buen camino.
Thank you. Buen camino.
My guest this week, Gabriella Ferenczi. And you can find her and her work at GabriellaFerenczi.com. Ferenczi. She's amazing. It's all there, GabriellaFerenczi.com. I'm Dan Mullins. I hope you enjoyed this week's chat. This is a weekly podcast about the Camino de Santiago. We're all pilgrims in life. One day your life will flash before your eyes. Make sure it's worth watching. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino.